All right.
Shavua
Tov. Shavua Tov.
You're welcome.
Shavua Tov, everybody. Can you hear me good or not so good?
Yeah, we hear you.
This is a little better, right?
Well, now it is. Before it was a little echoey.
Yeah. I ordered a new phone a few days ago, one of these portable things with a side jack for a headset, and it didn't come in yet. Then, because this one I'm used for the last 3, 4, 5 years, it just fall apart inside. It doesn't charge. The jack, you know, the headset's plug doesn't fall out.
Mordechai Lisowski.
Huh?
Mordechai Lisowski.
Okay, who's number one?
Jake,
okay. Who's number two?
Bruce.
Who's number three?
Caleb.
Caleb. Number four is Mordechai.
Abraham.
Abraham Puratarian.
Abraham Puratarian, yeah.
Yeah,
Mordechai
and number
Kaufman.
Five is Mordechai Lisowski.
Mordechai Kaufman.
Wait a minute, Mordechai Lisowski, is that you?
Mordechai, this is me.
Is that you, Mordechai?
Yes, I'm calling from the hospital.
Yeah, how come you didn't call in for the last few weeks?
I'm in the hospital now.
Oh.
I'm trying to do something.
What do you got?
I have an abscess on my foot, so I have to take care of it.
Oh, you mean you have you've been in the hospital how long?
I've been in the hospital a few days only, but I was having a lot of problems. But anyway, I'm here to listen to you guys and do some mitzvahs for a change.
All right, that's good. You should have a full shalema right away.
Thank you very much.
Jake from Chicago, Bruce from California, Kaylee from San Antonio, Texas, Avram Pertaya in Brooklyn, Mordechai Lisowski, Florida, Mordechai Kaufman, St. Louis. Anybody else?
Alex Schoimer.
Alex Manalapan Schoimer. Okay.
So
we have seven. Who else? Okay, nobody anymore. We got seven so far. All right, this week is
Chukka. So what's the blessing for surviving an earthquake?
What's that? What?
The blessing, I mean, if you see a rainbow, there's a blessing.
Yeah.
But what's the blessing for surviving an earthquake?
No such blessing, but there is a blessing when you hear the earthquake. When you hear thunder, lightning, or earthquake, you got to make a bracha, yeah. Surviving it, no. But when you hear this tremendous noise of an earthquake, you got to make kochu gavroso moli olam, just like the noise of thunder. And this in the city, you'll see it when you hear a loud noise. If it makes a loud noise, the earthquake. Anyhow, are you in California?
Yeah, the earth shook at 8:19 on Friday, on Shabbat.
What, you got there 8:19 on Friday?
Friday night. 8:19 p.m. We had a 7.1 earthquake.
Oh, who is this talking? Bruce?
Bruce,
I mean,
yep.
Who?
Bruce.
Charlie. Oh, you're in California. Oh, you live there. Okay, you had a 7.1
earthquake.
Yeah, I read about it. It was pretty strong. No one got killed, they said, so far.
Yeah, no casualties, just, you know, some damage, and it was like 80 miles from where the epicenter was, like 80 miles.
7.1. The strength was 7.19.
7.1.
Oh, 7.1. Well, you have to. Well, if you're not in it, you don't make a bracha. But if you're in it and you survive, you got to make a bracha.
Okay.
You have to make your bench gomel. Like when you get called up to the Torah, bench gomel, and then you give a seuda. If you really were in it and something collapsed and you were saved, you might got to make a bracha and give a seuda, invite your friends. But you know, when you have an earthquake, usually a few hours later is another one and another one and another one. It may last 3, 4, 5, 6 days.
I know that's what they're saying in Ridgecrest right now, is that there's all these aftershocks.
Yeah. You know, California, right there near Southern California, near L.A., you have a fault. What is it called? It's a
San Andreas.
San Andreas fault, yeah. I know.
Dina
it
Russell.
Means that's a weak place where the two.
Hi, Dina.
Hello.
Hi,
who's
Dina.
That? Who was that woman?
Dina Russell just got on.
Dina Russell, you were still in Chicago?
Yes.
Oh, how's your mother doing? Better, worse, or the same?
Not good.
Not good. Oh, I hope she has a full shalem because she has a wonderful daughter.
You sound like an optometrist right now.
Yeah,
better or worse?
I hope she.
She's not going to have it's a Rachmanis or whatever you call it.
What do you call it?
I don't know. She's not going to get better.
Oh, I hope. Well, you never know. You should have an easy. She should have an easier time. All right, Jake, Bruce, Caleb, Avram, Mordechai Dostowski, Mordechai Kaufman, St. Louis, Alex Shoyman, Manalapan, Dinah Ruckel, Chicago. Hey, anybody else?
There we go.
Who?
Mayor Pearl.
Mayor Pearl, California. Oh, did you see the doctor already?
Yeah, I saw him Friday.
Oh, so you have to have surgery, you think?
I had to go to the surgeon on July 10th.
All right, listen, I had two hernias, no big deal. 45-minute operation, then they kicked me out of the hospital after 3 hours.
Your hair,
I can't. It hurts to stand up. So
yeah, sure, but after you have the thing, everything's fine. Almost right. You have a little pain, but the real pain goes away. All right, let's talk about the Pasha Chukas. Well,
Barry Cohen.
What's that?
Hello? Barry
Charlie
Cohen.
Eason.
What's that? Two people talking at once. I didn't hear. What was that? All right.
Barry Cohen.
Barry Cohen on this online.
Who? What's that? I didn't hear. Two people talking at once. I can't hear.
BC.
Barry Cohen.
Oh, Barry Cohen. Okay. And who else? Is somebody else there?
Charlie.
Oh, Eason. Charlie Eason from Albany area.
And Yosef Yehuda.
Oh, why? Okay, we got 12 now. Let's go down for the top. Jake, Bruce, Caleb, Avram, Mordechai, Listowski, Mordechai Kaufman, Alex Schoimer, Dean Rocco, Mayor Pearl, Barry Cohn, Charlie Eason, and YY Figaro. We got the whole United States here. Jake from Chicago, Bruce from California, Caleb San Antonio, Avram Puritan, Brooklyn, Martin Listowski, Florida, Mordechai Kaufman, St. Louis, man, Schoimer from Alphen, New Jersey, Dina Ruckel from Chicago, Mayor Pearl from Florida, yeah, Barry Cohn from Maryland, Rockville, Maryland, Charlie Eason, Albany, YY from Sacramento. Boy, oh boy, we got a good chaburo. You know what a chaburo means? Two guys together as a chef, a chavruso. Two people learning them, but three or more is called a chaburo, a group. So we got them all over the United States. Let's go to Chukas. Chukas, what we'll learn in a minute. Yedav Hashem al Moshe Lemo. Hashem spoke to Moshe. Doesn't say Lemo. Yedav Hashem al Moshe. Vel Aharon. Lemo, just say it over. Zos Chukas HaTorah. We're in page 226
page
on the Art School. Zos, if you don't have that, then it's chapter number 19, Pasuk 1. Now we're Pasuk 2. Zos Chukas HaTorah. This is a statute, something we don't understand why. We know how to do it, but you don't know why. Zos chuk. Chuk is an enigma, something that works fabulously, but you don't know why. Zos chuk. This is a statute of the Torah. I should see about Hashem Lamer, the God commands the same. Da'vil b'nei Yisrael, speak to them, v'yikwe lechem, and they should bring to you. To you, who is that? Moshe and Aaron. Paro adumo, a red cow. Now, you don't really say paro, if you know how to read Hebrew. It's no dot in the pay. It's faro, like F-A-R-A, faro aduma. Sometimes it's paro, but this time it's faro because the word before it, elecho, you don't know enough about grammar, but cho is a tenua gadola, a strong sound. Therefore, fe is one of the six letters that get a dot. And if there's a cho before it, it's not paro, it's faro. Like Chayole Pharaoh, the soldiers of Pharaoh. But if it doesn't say A in front, then it's Paro. So a guy came to the rabbi. He said, Rabbi, what's the difference? Pharaoh, Paro. He says, what's your name? He says, Fisher. He says, now you know the difference. Oh, boy. All right.
Fisher.
That's a good one.
That's a great one, yeah. Yikwe lecho, faro adumo, a red cow. Paro means a female cow, over 3 years old. So all the English chumashim have it incorrect, except this one. It's not a red heifer. A heifer is a little baby calf below one. So this guy who wrote in English, other English chumashim heifer, doesn't know the English language. Because you would never write about a cow that must be three or older as a heifer. A heifer is a little baby cow just born, a calf. So So the guy who wrote it way back 150 years ago didn't know English, like the guy who said the Red Sea. There is no such thing as the Red Sea. Yam Suf is a reed sea. It has reeds in it. So the guy wrote R-E-D because he couldn't spell English. It should be R-E-E-D, reed sea, because Suf means a swamp where the water is only 50, 80, 100 feet tall. It's not a real ocean. It's a low 100 feet. What's that? So they had these long reeds, and it was the Reed Sea. Now, I looked it up once, years ago, in English, Old English, R-E-D-E is reed. In English, we don't, in America, we don't do that. Red is R-E-D, and reed is R-E-E-D. But Suf means swamp. Nothing to do with red. So it really is the Reed Sea. But the people call it Red Sea, so you say Red Sea. Like the sea in front of Japan is called the Yellow Sea. And the one down below Russia, down there in the south, is Black Sea. There's no such thing as a Black Sea or Red Sea or Yellow Sea. It's just, for whatever reason, they called it that. Take for yourself a red cow. Parah means a grown calf, not a calf, a big one. Farah Aduma. Now, could there was a stop after the word farah. But you can take a parah, a cow, Aduma Tamima, completely red. Adom is like dam, blood, red. Tamima, completely red. There's a million and million and billion hairs on a cow. It has to be every single hair. They have about 15 people checking the cow. It takes an hour. And then if there's two black hairs, it's puzzle. If it's one black hair, it's okay. Two black hairs with possibly animal. Never been a red cow since the thousands of years. When Mashiach comes, there will automatically be one. A red cow, because they have to kill it and sprinkle the blood on every single Jew living in the world, because we're all tamei from touching a mace. Ah, you didn't touch a mace, but you're born from a mother who touched a mace, who touched someone, who touched someone, who touched someone, who touched a mace. And if you don't get that cleaned off, you can go to a mikveh a million times. It wouldn't help you. You have to have the water ash combination of the part that was sprinkled on you. A few sprinkles have to be on your head. And then you go in the mikveh, and then you are able to go up to the Mahar Abayis in Yerushalayim. Anybody who goes up to the mountain today is a rush up. You're not allowed to. For 2,000 years, there has never been one Jew who was a Yerush Shemayim who ever went up there. And Eretz Yisrael in the last 50, 60 years had a lot of big tzaddikim. Even today, no one would dare step a foot up there unless you're an ignoramus and you don't know the halacha. Going to the Rambam, you chayiv koresh, your soul will be destroyed. Going to the Ramban, you're a big rush up, but not koresh. So you're not allowed to go up there by the Temple Mount. And any Jew that goes up there and gets beaten up by the Arabs, that is good for him. Because you're not supposed to be there. But he'll tell you, well, we own the country. We? Who's we? People don't keep the Torah, you mean? You can own the country, but you can't go up there anyhow. Till Mashiach comes. So the Orish Shoyim, they think they're doing a big thing. So why don't they look at the biggest rabbis that have been in Yerushalayim for the last 50 years since the state was founded? Why didn't one, O-N-E, one even go up there? One. Maybe it's forbidden. Because they don't know. They're ignoramuses, and that's it. A lot of people do a lot of things that doesn't mean it's right. Anyhow, bring a red cow, Tamima, perfectly red, she'ain bo mum, has no physical defect. Asher lo oleha ol, never had a yoke on it, never rains, never a saddle, never a blanket, no one ever leaned on the cow, a bird never settled on the back of the cow, never, it never had enough, it didn't carry anything, didn't have, what's that, lo oleha ol, ol is a yoke, anything. When the Satan also allows it, give it to Elazar, Aaron's son. Elazar kind of a hotzi es, also take it out, mechutz l'machna, out of the camp in the desert. There wasn't a Yerushalayim. They were out of the camp wherever they were. The shocked us and checked it, slaughtered it, in front of him. But lokach Elazar kind be dumb up. Elazar takes some of its blood, the etzba with his finger, the heezah, and he sprinkled it. No chach towards Ohel Moed, which may be a mile or two, or three, or six, or eight, 10 miles away. In that direction, like we all dive in the direction of Yerushalayim every day, don't we? In the direction of the Mishkan, Sheva Bomim, 7 times. But Sorav is a part of, then you burn the cow. Laying off in front of him, as odor of the skin, the sort of the flesh, dom of the blood, pierce of the manure inside, the food, but Yisroel burn. But look how Kohen takes eight eres, a branch of a cedar tree, which is a very tall tree. The azove and a piece of hyssop, the lowest plant possible. With shnitzel and a red string, string dyed with a red dye. With sasha and wrap it up all together. Throw it in the middle of the burning cow, which means in the cow eventually burns up, the belly will blow, it will expand because it's hollow inside, and you throw it into the animal while it's being burnt. The chibit is going to be washed into his clothes, the Kohen. The rochas will start by and put it, washes his body in a mikvah, mayim, water. Where do you have a mikvah in the desert? Well, the whole desert experience was miraculous.
Oasis.
Huh?
At an oasis.
Yeah, but they always had Mayim everywhere. Seems to be that Miriam's well traveled behind them, and it broke into 12 little riverlets. Every shave it had his little river, little stream, and he goes into one of these streams, and then he can come back to the camp. But Tomei HaKoyet Al Arav, and he's Tomei uncontaminated till the evening. He who burns it up, Yechabit Vugadav washes his clothes by Mayim and water. And then he puts his body in the water too. Doesn't mean you use soap and water. You just dip in for 1 second. He puts his flesh in the water. Means he can't have anything on his body. All the flesh was in contact with the water. He's only tumma to the evening. And then the pure man who went to the mikveh gathered ofar, or afer, the ashes, haparo. Now the ashes is all in a clump. You got to, you know, bash it down till it's powder-like. Leave it outside the camp. But in a holy place where there's no dead bodies. So this should be a testimony for the Jewish people. To watch this. The May needle, waters of a needle. Has nothing to do with a woman. A woman, when she has a period, she can't control it, so it sprinkles out. Well, you have to sprinkle this water on the people. Let's say you have 50 people in front of you. You put your hand in there, and you sprinkle it. Each person there must have at least one drop fall on his head. Medina, waters of sprinkling. Chatos, the carbon, is a sin offering. The Kippur Aduma is a sin offering. It cures you from tummy of a human corpse. Chatos, he it is. The Chiv is the host. If he who gathers it must watch. He who gathers the ashes, Afer's ashes, Haporo, wash his clothes. The tummy at Orv, he's only tummy till the evening, till sunset. The host of Nei soil. This should do be to the Bnei Yisrael and a ger, a proselyte, who converts the Sokum amongst them. The Chukas, everlasting Chok. Why do you do this? How come everybody that touches it and burns it is Tomei, you had to go to the mikveh, but upon whom you sprinkle the water is Tahar? How does everybody who's involved be Tomei in the manufacture of this ash water combination, but upon whom you sprinkle it is Tahar? That's an enigma, a chok, a mystery. Everyone involved is Tomei, but a guy upon whom you sprinkle is Tahar. That's and how does that work? That defies logic. That's why it's called a chok. It does make sense to people who are very great scholars. Most people can't grasp it. Like a woman who cleans for Pesach for weeks and weeks and weeks. She's filthy dirty, but the house is spotless. Same thing here. You do make the part of Duma your tummy till the evening, but the person upon whom you sprinkle it is Tahar. Just like a mechanic, he makes the car work great, fine, but he's filthy dirty. Interesting, right?
I have a question.
What's that?
I have a question. Yeah. Is this talking about something that they did or will do?
No, they did it. They did
it
in the desert. They had in the desert. They had a red cow.
Okay.
Now, there's no red cow living in the world today. 8 years ago, somebody in Israel said he has a red cow. And the Rabbanim came up and looked at it, and it's pretty good. It almost was perfectly red. But they said, when it was born? Well, it's only 2 weeks old, 3 weeks old. And did you ever put a blanket on it? Did you ever lean on it? Did you ever put a hook to it, pull it? Did you ever put anything on its back? No, I know the laws of Parat Duma. I didn't put nothing on it. They eventually found tiny couple black hairs, so it's a puzzle. That means the Mashiach is coming, but this one was not it, but it was very close. Because for thousands of years, it was never. And we don't talk about a brown cow, we're talking about red. Now, what the Gemara says, what red? Red like, it said red like blood or light red, pink. What kind of red? A fire engine red? Burgundy red, which is dark? Light red, which is almost towards pink? What do you mean, red? Well, blood red, that could be. Maybe that's it. We don't know. This is something that, well, red could be five different shades, 10 shades, you know that. So the Gemara discusses this. So when Mashiach comes, don't worry about it. It's not our business. He'll tell us this is a red cow, and this is what we call red, and he's going to be a Navi, and he's going to be the king, and you don't have to worry about how it works. Now it tells you, what do you use the waters of the red cow for? He who touches a corpse, any corpse, even a Jew or a Gentile, the chol nefesh, even the blood of a corpse, Adam, of a human being, tome, he's tome 7 days. There's nothing that makes a Jew tome for 7 days except touching a corpse or the blood of a corpse. Or a woman that gives birth, she's tome 7 days. Yodledes, she's called. Who is chatov yom, that he should cleanse himself from sin. See the word yitzchato? Chet is a sin. Yitzchato, clean yourself from the sin. Boviyom shlishi means you have to be sprinkled the water on the third day. Boviyom shvi, the seventh day. Then you're tohar. You have to go to mikvah the first day and the last day. But you have to have the water, the ash and water combination sprinkled on you on the third day and on the seventh day. Then you're tohar. Vimlo yitzchato, if you don't get rid of your chet, your sin of being tome, boviyom shlishi, the third day, on the seventh day, where it doesn't help a bit. So from this, we learn a Kabbalistic concept. You know, Kabbalah is not the literal meaning. It's a deep meaning. If a person is 30 years old, and he doesn't start to do tshuva, at 70, it won't help. See what it says? Lo yizchato. And puzzle number 11, the middle. If you do not clean yourself from sin, Yom HaShlishi means at 30 years of age. Yom HaShvi'i, that in seventh year, doing tshuva when you're old man, not going to help because, of course, you ran out of energy to do all those sins and you're already more older and you're retired. So, sure, you're not looking after physical pleasures. You did all the sins already. So, it doesn't help to do tshuva when you're old because, by default, sure, you can't do anything. So, now the guy told me, well, now I'm going to be a Shom HaShabbos. I said, what good is that? You're laid off from work. You're retired. Well, what are you going to do on the seventh day? That's not called keeping Shabbos. Well, I could have been. How are you right? You get credit, but really, you know, when it's a fight, that's when you get rewarded. When you're old, 70 years old, and they do shul, keep Shabbos, very nice. But it says in the pasuk here, if you don't start at 30 when you're full of energy and ideas, then 70 won't can make you clear, holy. It's a Musa type of thing. It's like a character thing, you know, to tell a person you should do true when you're young, when you could do all those sins and you withhold yourself. Okay, pasuk number 13. Kol hanegeba mace, anyone that touches a mace. You just said that a minute ago, didn't you? Up on top of the page, hanegeba mace. So what's the difference? It says here on the top of the page, you touch a mace, kol nefesh, or something that keeps you alive, means your blood of a mace. And on the bottom it says, kol hanegeba mace, anyone touches a mace, benefesh adam, a human being. Well, what's it? Asher yomos, that died. Well, of course, if you touch a living person, you're not tome. Why are you going to tell me, asher yomos, that he died or he was killed by somebody? But lo yizchato, and he doesn't clean himself from sin, he can never come into the Mishkan. He can never eat any korbanos, not even korban Pesach. A Jew sometimes has to, if you're a kohen, for sure you got to eat certain sacrifices the person brings, and you must eat part of it. So if you're a kohen that's tome, you can't eat any korbanos. You don't have to eat it, but you have no other income because you don't own land. You come from the tribe of Levi, so you have to have there's a meat. But so it says any person, a human, if he touches a human corpse, died or he was killed, v'lo yischa, doesn't clean himself from sin. As Mishkan Hashem told me, he contaminates God's Mishkan if he comes in. Ooh, these are strict laws. That soul will be destroyed. Called may need all the waters of sprinkling. That means the part of Duma waters, ashes and water mixed together. Lo Yisrael was not sprinkled on him. Tell me who? Oh, he's told you forever. Unless he goes, does this procedure, that 7 day procedure. Tumas on him. Every Jew in the world today is Tome, but we don't have to be Tohar because we don't eat korbanos. And we don't go up to the mountain. And there's no base in Migdash. Why can't you be Tomei? You can only, you only have to be Torah. By the way, a regular Jew doesn't have to be Torah only once or twice or three times a year when he wants to go to the base of Mikdash up on the hill or eat Karbanos. But otherwise, why should he be Torah? Kohen has to be Torah all the time because he has to eat Karbanos. He comes into the place. He's always hanging around there. But a regular Jew, some Jews, you know, if you touch a dead body, let's say a dead pig, even it, yeah, then you're Tomei. So let's say you're in the business of making baseballs or footballs or basketballs. Well, that's pig skin or whatever skin. So why can't you do that? Or attaché cases or leather jackets or leather belts or leather wallets. That's your business, dealing with hide of all kind of animals. Nothing wrong with that, except if you want to come and eat carbonas, let's say your carbon pesos, you must eat, then you better take care of yourself and clean yourself from only a human being. Dead person makes your tummy for 7 days. All other things, only one day. Because the human being is the holiest. When he dies, he's the most unholy. Posting number 14. Zos HaTorah. This is the rule.
Somebody facing a Hevra Kedisha.
Oh, yeah. Very good. They're tummy all the time. And they have a big mitzvah. Because they have to take care of the dead. Now, your question is, of course, what happens if Mashiach comes? And then you got to eat the carbon paste. It takes 7 days to clean yourself from a mason. Suppose somebody dies, we're going to leave him alone? Let's say he died 3 days before Pesach. The mitzvah, the biggest mitzvah in the world to bury him. So, but you're going to, you don't have 7 days of purity before between the 3 days before Pesach and Pesach. You have to be, it's a seven-day period. So what do you do? So you make Pesach Sheni a month later. Now, you mean nobody's going to die 7 days before Passover? You mean, come on, that's no miracle world. That, no, we don't live in a world like that. Say Mashiach came tomorrow. You mean no one's going to die 7 days before Passover? I mean, the Hevra Kedisha can never eat carbon peso, you mean? How do you do that? So, and what are you going to do? Get a guy to do it? Could be. A guy can make a tahara. No, not be a Jew. You watch him, what he's doing. Oh, you have to stand Dalai Lama's away from him, 8 feet away. Because you don't even have to touch him. If you come within a few feet of a dead person, you're telling me too. That's why a Kohen can never walk in a cemetery. If it's all Goyish cemetery, then you can walk because they don't make you tell me. But if it's a Jewish cemetery, how can a Kohen walk in there? Or you drive on a road that has trees, big trees. Some are hanging over the grave, and the other side of the trees over the highway. Mm-hmm. So if the road, a little country road, is right next to a cemetery and it's a big, huge tree, if you're driving in the car, you close the windows, and you can go right under the tree. But if you're walking, you become Tomei, if that tree is covering you and the grave, even if the guy's buried 500 years ago or 5 days ago, makes no difference. The grave has tumma coming out of it. Therefore, a Kohen can never go in the cemetery. So suppose you're a Kohen and your father died. You mean you can't go once a year or twice a year to visit your father? No, you can't go to a Kohen can never go to a cemetery. Well, that's why they bury the cemetery, they go out next to the fence. So the children can be right outside the fence. So you're not in the cemetery, but you're within 6 feet away. That means that a Kohen cannot be a doctor. Kohen cannot be a medical doctor. You'd be a chronic doctor, math, PhD, and whatever. But you can't be an MD. So, you know, Baal Tshuvas, I have him for all these years. One guy told me my name is Kohen. I said, you're a Kohen? Yeah, and I'm a doctor. And I know what you're going to say, Rabbi. I heard it already. I said, well, I'm just telling you what you have. Yeah, you didn't know it when you went to medical school, but now you know it. I said, you know you have to go to the hospital 2-3 times a week to visit your patients. What do you do? I don't want to talk about it, he said. So the ideal way is, if a guy really wants to do the right thing, he gets his friend, a guy, or a Jew, who's not a Kohen, and say, listen, take care of my patients these days, and you can never go to the hospital again. Suppose you get sick, you got to be going taken to the hospital. That's all right, because your life is in danger. But if you break your leg, your life is not in danger, you try not to go to the hospital. Maybe go to a doctor's office. These dinim, I don't know. But a guy who's a Kohen cannot be in a place where there's, if there's dead goyim, it's all right. But if it's dead Jews, you can't be there. If you live in any place where there's other Jews, you know, every hospital has Jews. Now, if you go into a tent and the Jew is lying there, the airspace makes you tummy. But if you touch, if a coin goes right next to a guy, he's not tummy unless he touches him, because the guy's tummy is not that powerful like a Jew. A Jew in a building, the whole building is the airspace, and the building makes you tummy because you're a coin. You can't go in the building. But a Gentile is lesser, so you have to touch him to get tummy. So even the blood of a Gentile, you have to touch it. Or the blood of a Jew, you go your tummy. Now, we, people who are not Kohanim, can be tummy because we have no restriction. A coin should not be tummy. Anybody that I'm talking to now is a coin? Okay, we're not Kohanim. But a coin.
Alex Schoimer is a coin.
Who?
Jake Weinman.
Who?
Jake.
Kate who?
Jake.
Oh, Jake, you're a coin?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Oh.
You have to know these rules. Jake
Alex
Weinman.
Schoimer is also a coin.
Who? What?
Alex Schoimer.
You're a coin?
Yes.
All right. Now you have to know these denim. And it's very a shock to people who are not brought up religious. But what do you do if your father's sick? And, of course, you can take care of him. But let's say he dies at home. You're in his house. There's a big problem there. You can't go to the hospital. You got to ask your rabbi about it. These are complicated questions. Or let's say you were not religious, you went to medical school and you cut up these cadavers. You shouldn't have done that. But now you're a Baal Tshuva. Now what do you do? So the guy asked me that like 20 years ago. I said, you want me to make you feel good or you want to hear the truth? Tell me the truth, Rabbi. I can take it. I said, you can't ever go to the hospital again. You can't visit your patients. But I'm not interested. Get a friend to do it. You want to keep the Torah or you want to be, you want to do it or you want to, I mean, listen, I'm not here to tell you lies. It's difficult. Yes. But don't blood trust me. Go to some other Orthodox rabbi. They'll tell you the same thing. I'll tell you in half a minute, but it'll take 15 to half an hour before they get to the point. But it's a difficult thing, even the police today. Okay, now let's go further. And then we're going to ask some questions about this. Okay. Plus 14. This is the rules. Zos HaTorah means these are the details. Adam ki yomos ba'ol, a man dies in a tent. That means a house, a hospital. Oh, hell, any closed building, even with material clothes or wood building or stone building. Kol ha'boilo, anyone who comes in, kol ha'shir ba'ol, everyone who is there while he died or is dead, yitmo, she was here, your tummy 7 days. Kol kli pasuch, any open vessel, she'ain somit pasuch, the top is not sealed tightly on it. Everything in it is tummy. Can't eat it. B'chol asher yiga, anything you touch out on the field, b'cholo cherev, in a corpse of b'cholo, leaving the sword or the dagger that killed him. Oh, b'meis, or the corpse itself. Oh, b'etzem, or a bone, let's say a bone is 50 years in the ground already. So what? It can make you tummy, a bone. Or the sword that the guy killed him with, or the wood that he was hanging on, or whatever. Adam Oba Kaver, even if you stand over the grave and he's 6 foot under, the grave puts off a tumor. That's why Cohen can't go to a cemetery. Yitmo, she was young, your tummy 7 days. Now, the only creature in the world that's tummy when he's living is a human being. Because I can touch a maze, I'm tummy. But I can't, if I touch a pig, it's not tummy. It's a living pig. It's not tummy. If he touch a snail or a worm, it's not tummy unless it's dead, it's something else. The only living creature that could be tummy is a human being. An animal is never tummy unless it's dead. A human being could be a living and he's tummy. A pig is not tummy until he's dead. Then it makes a coin tummy. Or even me, but I don't have to be tummy. I'm not a coin. Interesting. The only creature there that's tummy while he's living is human. You take from for him. May afar. Now you see how the word is spelled with the ayin means ash. Means dust. The other way is ash. Aleph Pei Resh is ash. When the big cow dies, big pile of ash, you bash it down and you pulverize it to offer. You know, very powder-like offer. You take the pulverized ash into which is now dust. Sereif Hasachatos of the burned up sin offering, which it is. Now, you put it on the water that's already in the vessel. You don't pour water on it. You put the ashes on the water. The water represents the neshama. The ashes represents the body. First comes the neshama when the child is 40 days old, and then gets born. It has a neshama. Then comes the body after 9 months. First comes the neshama, which is like water, because when you heat water, it turns into a vapor. Like when the person dies, he gets disintegrated into a gas. So what comes first is the neshama. The water has to be in the keli. Then you put the ash over the keli. And that's the body that comes out after 9 months. The baby is living when it's inside. So you have this mixture of ashes of the red cow with water. Now, I don't know how much water to ash it is, if it's 100 gallons to half an ounce. I have no idea. Some kind of mixture. And it says since the first time they made the Paro Adumah until the second temple was destroyed, there was only 6 or 7 Paro Adumahs. They took the ashes from the first one and already mixed it with a lot of water, and that made the second batch already like the first. Then when the second batch got used up, they put more water into the original. That made that. It seems to be only needed one original Paro Adumah. Because if you take some of the leftover water mixture and mix it with another bunch of water, it's also Paro Adumah water. I think they say there was only in the history of the world 8 Paro Adumahs ever. Of course, Mashiach comes, will make it another one. And all of a sudden, this red cow will appear somewhere. That's a simon that he's real Mashiach. Now we're up to Shani. Now let's ask you some comment questions. It says now, if you know a little bit about Hebrew, go to the first blessing. Zos, God said to Moshe, Zos, this is Chukasetor, the statute of Torah. An enigma means it doesn't make any sense. Everybody involved with it gets Tomei, and the ash water combo sprinkled in someone makes him whole, a tar. How could it be? The guy that sprinkles it is Tomei, but you get on your tar. That's not logic. So there's really 7 things in Jewish life that are chukim, that are very hard to understand. One is shatnez, wool you can wear, linen you can wear. 2 positive things together is forbidden. That's an enigma, another chuk. How could it be? Milk you can drink, meat you can eat, kosher milk and kosher meat together it's asur. That's an enigma, another chuk. It's not logic. It's real logic. If you're a big Torah scholar, you know Kabbalah. But the average person, he can't grasp this. Then there's other ones. Like, for instance, what's the other one?
Wool and linen.
Huh? Paro Adumah. Okay, that's one. But then comes shatnez. Then comes bas b'chol. Okay, now comes like this. There's a thing called yibum. Your brother dies without kids. Now, that woman, your sister-in-law, can't marry any human being in the world. She must be married to the husband's brother. You don't like her, so you get married one night, you sleep with her, and then you can give her the get. Then she can marry anybody in the world. And that child, if it's born, doesn't take your neshama, it takes your brother's neshama who died. Now, you made a baby, but it has your brother's neshama who's dead. That's also a chok. That's illogical. That's the law of Yibum. That's the law of Yibum. That's the way it works. There's a few more. Like, what's another one? I had a whole list here of them. Shatner, Abbasul Cholov. On Yom Kippur, you take a goat, you throw it off a mountain cliff. And that gets rid of all your averas. Huh? That's a chok. That's an enigma. It means I can't understand it. A chok means something. It baffles my mind. Or another one, eglo arufa. You see a Jewish body that's dead, you don't know who killed him. So you take an eagle, a calf, and you chop off the head with an axe from the back. And that is like killing the perpetrator. What? That's such a law. You don't know who killed this Jew, but you have to kill the person who killed him because and Jewish people, and the Torah believes in capital punishment. You have to kill the murderer, but you don't know who it is. Maybe it's a guy, maybe it's a yid, maybe it's an animal, who knows. You take an eagle, a calf below 1 year, and auto fits the back of the neck, you chop it off with an axe, and that's like you killed the murderer. And the Gemara says, well, not exactly. You take the axe and you place it very carefully on the back of the calf. The calf now starts to run, and it'll take you to the house of the perpetrator. Now, the Gemara says, yeah, but you have no witnesses, and the Torah is not conducted by heavenly signs. We have a Torah. That means you need two witnesses, otherwise you can't kill the guy. I know the calf ran. It was a miracle, and this is the guy, and you tell him, we know you killed this Mr. Chaim Yanko, whatever his name is, and you know you're going to be executed. They don't tell them that they can't execute him. You know you're going to be executed. Admit it. When did you do it? How did you do it? Where did you do it? If he swears to you, I never knew the man. I never was there. Now, God could not make that animal run to that house but for nothing if it wasn't true. But you can never execute. You can intimidate him, make him admit it, but you can't kill him unless you have two witnesses. That's the halacha. You have 100 women seeing one man kill another. You cannot kill the perpetrator because women cannot be witnesses. They could be the holiest women in the world. That's the technicalities of halacha. It got to be two men who don't know each other, not related to each other, not related to the victim, and they're both total keep the mitzvahs of the Torah. They got to be religious. So there's certain technicalities that are very difficult. Even if the calf runs to the guy, this particular guy's house, he maybe have killed him, but he's a good liar. Or maybe he really didn't. Why is he running to that house? Maybe it's not the guy. Maybe it's his wife. Maybe it's his son. Maybe it's his brother. Somebody in that house is guilty. And you have to tell the guy, you could be killed for this. Come on, admit it. When did you do it? How did you do it? When did you do it? Now, if a person admits, it means nothing at the Jewish court. You got to have two witnesses. You can come in front of a business. I killed this man. Here's the knife. It means nothing. Get out of here. You cannot indict yourself. You must have to aid him. So what good does it do that this animal runs to the guy's house? Maybe it's a mile away, 5 miles away. The Gemara discusses this. Admission is nothing. You need to aid him. But God made a sign. I know somebody in the house. Maybe who said it's that guy? Maybe it's someone that was in the house for 1 hour and went away. That's a very difficult subject, the whole thing. You see how complicated it gets? It's not so pushing. It's only pushing if you read it. But if you just learn it, it's very complicated. Okay, what other kind of, the one on Yom Kippur, we throw the goat over the mountain, everybody sins, is atoned for, really? And Parah Aduma is one. Tzatnis is two. The goat over the mountain is three. Yibum, marry your sister, which is a big sin, but if your brother dies without children, you have to marry her. And she can't marry anyone else unless you do yibum or give her chalitza. It means I don't want, and she don't want you, and you don't want her. That's fine then. Then she can marry anybody else in the world. But the firm obligation is the guy's brother. Suppose the guy has no brother, then she's free to marry any man in the world. But if he has a brother, you go to the next oldest brother. You want to give her yibum. Now let's say she's extremely beautiful. That means you get married one night, that's why you sleep with her, and then you're done, you miss her. But let's say he's marrying her because she's gorgeous. They whisper in his ears, do not marry her. Give her chalitza. That's a type of get. Give her chalitza because he's marrying her for his own gratification. Then he's marrying his sister-in-law, not for you, but for his own. And that's a terrible sin. That's one of the worst sins in the Torah, marrying your sister-in-law if she's divorced. Let's say from your brother, and she has children. You can never marry your sister-in-law. He can never marry your sister-in-law. But if he dies without children, it's a mitzvah to marry your sister-in-law. And you don't have to if you don't want to, and she don't want to. You give her chalitza. But if you want to, you can if you want. But you got to be sure you're doing it for the mitzvah. But if you're doing it only because she's gorgeous, it's not really for the mitzvah. You're getting some personal pleasure out of it. They advise you not to do it. Don't give her chalitza, means get rid of her, get divorced. All right, that takes care of that. Anybody have any questions so far?
Was all this taking place before the battle?
Of what?
So
what battle?
In battle, they're killing people.
Where?
There's dead bodies
here.
All over, so.
Oh, one man got killed. It means somewhere in Jewish life, 1,000 years later, if a man got nothing to do with part of Doom, I'm talking about Egla Rufa. That's another din. Egla Rufa means some Jew got killed somewhere, and we don't know who the perpetrator is. You take an egel, a calf, and you cut his, some say you chop his head off, and that is like killing the perpetrator. That's one of these chukim, these mystery things. That's an egla rufa. That's something else. I'm telling you how many chukim in the Torah there are. There are about 7. So why did you say zos? This is the only one. Why don't you say, Hashem told Moshe, elu the, this is one of the 7. Answer is that Parah Aduma is the most difficult to understand from all the other 7. How do you know? Because Shlomo HaMelech, the wisest man that ever lived, says, I understand all the chukim in the Torah. I understand all the dinim, the laws, the positive, the negative, this mystical, except Parah Aduma. I don't get it. So that's why it's the most difficult, even for Shlomo, the wisest man, wiser than any human being that ever lived. He knew when plants talk to each other, when animals communicate with each other, when planets talk to each other. He could hear that. Shlomo was the wisest man. So he did not understand Parah Aduma. So in Shir HaShirim, which he wrote, he said, I know all knowledge, but one thing is far away from me. Rechoko mimani. That's exactly the gematria of Parah Aduma. He didn't understand it. He couldn't grasp it. That's why it's the most difficult of all the other. So my father, Zatzal, wrote a sefer, and he said, you mean Shlomo HaMelech, the wisest of all men, didn't understand Parah Aduma, and the Talmud tells us Moshe did? But I thought you just told me Shlomo is Chacham Mikol Adam. But even more than anybody. But Moshe did understand Parah Aduma. So my father was a very, very big Kabbalist, but he didn't want anybody to know. He always told the person who wrote the Sefer in Hebrew, don't let them know it comes from the Zohar, which is the Kabbalah. Just write, a Medrash says. Because the Kabbalah is a Medrash, type of Medrash. It's not a literal translation of the Torah. Say, there's a Medrash that says. Then when you say this without giving the name, every Torah scholar knows what you mean. But the average person says, well, he didn't know the name. Because he doesn't understand the code language. So he said like this. Moshe Rabbeinu was more than a human being. Shlomo's Chacham Mikol Adam. Moshe is greater than Adam. Why? When he went to Har Sinai in the burning fire, the mountain was on inferno, and he came back 40 days later. When he went up 40 days, he said, I didn't eat or sleep. 40 days, 3 times. He survived. Moshe Rabbeinu was Chatzi Adam, half man, Chatzi Malach, half angel. He could survive intense heat, because fire cannot burn fire, and he was wiser than... See, Shlomo was the biggest chacham who uses intelligence. There's another level beyond intelligence, intimate knowledge with God. Moshe was the greatest Navi that ever lived and ever will live. He had such holiness in his body that he's like, already while he's living, like an angel. 40 days without food 3 times? Come on, how do you do this? He wrote in the Torah, I didn't eat any. Hashem made him write that. I didn't eat. Well, he would never have written that unless it was forced to write, because he wouldn't say anything that he was great. So you're talking about a super person, beyond human. And when he died, he went up to that mountain. And as soon as he died, thousands of people stormed the mountain, and they're looking for his grave for days and days and weeks, and never could find it. So Hashem said, you will never find it. Even though it's in front of you, you'll never know it. You'll never find it. You'll never see it. Like air. Can you grab a packet full of hair or air or something? Can you put it in your pocket? I mean, it's there, but no one sees it. Shem is there every second in front of you, and you can't see him. A lot of things you don't see. Dogs can hear what you can't hear. Birds can hear what you can't hear. Birds can see what you can't see, but it's right there. You couldn't see germs until this guy invented the microscope 400 years ago, but it's there. And knowledge is the same way. It's a certain knowledge right here, but some people see it and some don't. Korach last week couldn't see it, but Moshe saw it. He said, poor fellow, please do tshuva. The ground started shaking underneath him. He says, no, I'm convinced I'm right, and I know that you're not a leader. I am more fit than you. He says, but I split the I took you out of Egypt. I brought down the Mon, and I brought down the Torah, and I stayed there 40 days in fire. What's your problem? He was so twisted in his mind. Brilliant man. But once you are a sinner, Hashem takes away your common sense. There's chokhmah, there's bina, there's das. But seichel, common sense, sometimes the greatest person doesn't have it. You see people like that in life. They got a PhD, but they don't have common sense. They don't know how to handle simple problems that any blue-collar worker understands how to do it. What happened to your common sense? That's a punishment for evil people that are brilliant. God takes away the common sense. They just don't see the truth. So he went into the Red Sea, Paro, with all the soldiers, and they got drowned. You're going to go into a split sea. Don't you understand this is a trap waiting for dummies to come in? Where's your brains? You're a 10-time loser in Mitzrayim already. That's the punishment for brilliant people who are wicked. God takes away their brilliance, and they do the stupidest things. Because that's the punishment. You can't see the common. You don't see, understand common sense. So Moshe Rabbeinu was greater than Shlomo because he was Shlomo. Chokham be called Adam. Moshe is more than Adam. Chatzi Adam, Chatzi Malach. And he understood it because he was the holiest person physically. If you make yourself holy physically, that's the highest level. Everybody's soul is holy. Make your body holy. Don't eat what you shouldn't. Don't look what you're not supposed to. Don't think what you're not supposed to. Don't work when you're not supposed to. Don't wear clothes you're not supposed to. Make your physical into spiritual. That's very hard. We work on it every day. And people that are very wicked hate you because you're so different than them. You are dedicated to an idea they don't get. They don't understand. What are you doing? We will die for this idea, and they think it's nonsense. Well, that's perfectly normal. That's why Avraham Avinu was thrown into the fiery oven. He said, throw me in. No problem. And he came out alive because he figured out Emes. And we don't need Gerim, and Gerim want to come, we discourage them. We don't need numbers. One Jew is enough in the whole world. That'll take care of everything. It started from one, didn't it? And Mashiach has won. He's going to fight off the whole world. We don't care if you join us or not. The Emes is the Emes because it's Emes, and there's no way. And once you're hooked on Emes, you can do whatever you want. I'm not changing my mind because I know it's true. And that's a certain point in life you get to that sometimes where you're so convinced that everything fits together like a puzzle. Nothing in the Torah contradicts itself. That's why we learn Gemara. They say this and this and this and this and this and this and this. And someone says, but how do you say that? Over there, another Gemara we learned differently. He says, yeah, that other Gemara has nothing to do with this Gemara. Yes, it is. No, it isn't. And they compare until the guy has to back off. You're right. I didn't realize it. That's what called intelligent debate is. I look at it from every possible side. Until I cannot, I'm checkmate, I'm finished. The guy got me. I can't hold my own ground. Then he's right, I lost. Like chess, the guy who has your king wins. No discussion, it's over. That's the way life is. If you know how to figure out a math problem, and you, but your friend can't, so you did it, he didn't. Torah has answers to everything in life. If you take the time to study it, and it's very satisfying. Extremely, when your mind gets so hungry for knowledge and you're feeding it the truth and it so gets so sacked, so satisfied with real stuff rather than your belly. Some people dedicate their whole life to learning Torah because it's so satisfying because there's no, you can't disprove it. You see? And it's very hard to be a Torah scholar. Many people are religious, do the mitzvahs, but very few are scholars. Do you want to know why is it like this? Why basar you can eat and chalav you can eat, but not together. You can wear wool and you can wear linen, but not, why is it together becomes poison or something forbidden? That's a chok, that's an enigma. It means, it doesn't make, yeah, to our little brain, it doesn't make sense. For the real scholars, it's perfect. Understand it. It's like, okay, like I told you. Anyhow, it's 11:05. Any questions?
I have Rabbi, one question, Rabbi.
Go ahead, look, ask me one question.
It's about verse 21. It says, anyone who touches their sprinkling shall be impure. Does that mean they accidentally touched it?
Accidentally?
Where they
actually
fell on
them?
You
mean a dead body? Let's say you're sitting in a building and the guy keels over on you. That's right. You're telling me.
No. Later in verse 21, it says, and one who touches the water of sprinkling shall be impure.
Passage 21. Wait a minute. We didn't get there. Yeah. I think you're ahead of us, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
What page
we didn't get there.
What chapter? What?
233.
Oh, 233. Oh, you went. Okay, let's see now. Oh, yeah, I see that here. 233. What passage? 21?
Yes.
Huh?
Yes, 21.
Ho yisol lahem lechukas olam. Umarze, he who sprinkles, may nido, not on a person, just touches it and sprinkles it, he has to wash his clothes because he became Tommy. You cannot use it for no reason. It has to be for a reason. You can't just sprinkle on nobody. It has to be the people in front of you need tahara. Just to sprinkle it, you did an avera. You can't use it for no reason. May need the waters of the chatos, the sin offering. You have to wash your clothes because you're Tommy. And he who touches it for no reason, you're Tommy till the evening. Because you have, what did you touch it for? You just can't touch that stuff without a reason. Call and puzzle number 22. I share. Yigabo, Tomei, what's that? The impure one shall touch. Let's say you're impure already. Yitma Hanefesh, let's say impure one who will touch shall be impure. But if you're already impure, what's then? Chol Asher Yigabo Hatomei, and impure one shall touch shall be impure, means you become more impure. Hanefesh, and again, a demon in order, and person who it touches shall be impure till the evening. Every pasuk here have many, many, many pasukim lines in the Gemara. All this is highly complicated stuff.
That's how you touch them.
Yeah.
That's how you, the dead body. And you touch it, you reach out to someone touches you, stay in the room.
Hello? Hello?
Yeah. Here I am. You hear me?
Yep.
Yeah. All right, then whoever says hello, your phone was something went wrong. And look, the dead body is called Avia Vosa Tuma, the father of all Tuma. The person that touches it is Rishon Latuma, the first one. The guy that touches the Rishon is Shani Latuma. The guy that touches him is Shlishi Latuma. I think it only goes to the fourth stage. After that, it doesn't pass on anymore. But these are complicated rules of Tumas Meis, the Tumi of a dead body. And it's the only time you have to spend 7 days. Only a woman who gives birth and a guy who touches a dead corpse. It's 7 days, Tommy. Most other things, you're just Tommy till the end of the day, till sunset.
What Gemara talks about this?
The Gemara and called the Gemara in where is this Gemara here? I tell you the Gemara. You get an English translated Gemara, you'll see it. What Gemara here? The beginning of the parasha right here. It tells you the first Gemara. A Medrash, no, the Gemara, where's the Gemara? No, hold it. Tell you which the first Gemara that talks about it. Hold the Medrashim. Where's their Gemara? What Gemara is this? Medrash, a lot of Medrashim, boy. Where's the Gemara? Oh, Gemara Paraduma. It's called Paraduma, the Gemara. Paraduma. They're part of the tract they call Parah. It discusses this. All the complicated rules. Very complicated subject. Anyhow, any more questions?
Yes. Rabbi, later in this midrash, later in this
Parsha.
Yeah, thank you. It talks about Sefer Milchama.
Oh, a war.
Well, it says Sefer Milchama.
Sefer Milchama Hashem, the wars of God. What pasuk is that?
It's 14. In the Stone Chumash, it's chapter, it's page 851.
No, what in the Brown Chumash, in the Rashi Chumash?
So it's Shishi.
Chapter what, 20?
Yeah, chapter 21.
21. Hold it, let me get there and I'll tell you what that is. You should get a Rashi Chumash, because there you can learn all the Rashis. Stone Chumash only brings very few Rashis.
No, I think the stone has the Rashi.
Really? Not every Rashi, just some. This one has every single Rashi. 21, what pasuk?
So it's pasuk...
what?
14.
All right, let me get there.
You're
9, you're 10, 11, 13, 14. 14, 13, hold it. Okay, therefore, Yeomar, it says the Sefer in the book, Milchamas Hashem, the waters of God. Rashi, look what he says. If you don't have a Rashi, you got to get rid of that Chumash. Okay, therefore, Rashi says, about this encampment and the miracles that were done to it, it will be said in the story of the waters of Hashem. This is when they tell the miracles which were done for our forefathers, they will relate this thing. So, what is this all about? Eight on the bottom. Sefer, the book of Hashem's words. What is that? Sefer usually means book. But if it were used in that sense here, the verse would have said, Yikos Sefer, Sefer, written in a book. Since it's not written, it's a story they tell verbally. Will be written in a book. But it doesn't say Yikos Sefer. Will be said. Implies that the Sefer, as you hear, is used in the sense of a story that people tell from father to son. It's not written in any book. Where do you see that? Mizrahi, look at the Sifsei Chachomim, Rashi on Gemara, on the Breishis, chapter 5, Pasuk 1, Sefer Milchamas Hashem. It's called the Book of God's Stories. So you have to have the Rashi on every single Pasuk. Only the Brown Sabbath and Chumash is like that.
Question.
Yeah, and nothing.
So it's passed down. It's passed down orally.
Uh huh. Yeah,
okay, Rabbi, I'm gonna hang up now.
Yeah, you're really good, a Sefer doesn't mean a book. It means the Sipur.
Good night.
Sipur is, who is this?
Good night, Abraham.
Okay, Abraham, good night. You know, Sefer, book, also is related to Sipur, a story. A story is a, you tell, in Hebrew, Sipur is a story. Sefer, sometimes you write it down, sometimes you don't. But Sipur is a verbal story. It doesn't have to have been on pages. It could be a story, like a Sipur is a story that people tell. So this is, where is that book?
That's how the Gemara was oral also.
Also was oral, but it was written down. This Sefer Milchamas Hashem was lost, it says. If you look at the Midrashim on it, it was Sefer that had way back. It's lost. No one knows where it is. Maybe the stories one day were written in a book. Could be. Where is that book? No one knows. All right, and gentlemen, it's now 11:10. We're early tonight. We're going to hang up, and we'll see you again on Tuesday night. Im Yirtzeh Hashem.
Thank you very much.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Bye-bye.
I have questions.
Send him an email.
Text him.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.